Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Hello? Hello? I don't understand this. Huh. Unbelievable. Too long now. Okay. We are seemingly on the air, and okay, I'm just not quite sure what's going on at the moment. Seems we're on the air. At the same time, somebody has called in now. They've been on the line now for 2 minutes, and I don't hear them. I'm just flabbergasted by the constant changing dysfunction. I just don't get it. I literally don't get it anymore. Okay, I'm going to disconnect this call in the hope that they'll call again, and hopefully it'll come through this time. I don't even know if you're hearing me. I'm literally blown away, and we're 3 minutes into the show. Amazing. Literally amazing. Unbelievable. Let's see if this works.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester On The Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Well, the introduction for me, I could play, so that did come through on the phone. So I really don't understand what's going on here. Okay, we are connected. The recording, I could hear the recording, our audio clip. So that was working. And well, we'll just have to see what else is going on. I'm really not quite sure what's happening here at this point. Okay, let's see if this works.
Do you hear me?
1 second. Good morning. Is this Brendan?
No, it's Jeff.
Wow. Oh, it is Brendan. How are you?
No, it's Jeff.
Hello?
Brendan might be there, but it's Jeff.
Hi. Oh, hi, Jeffrey. I'm glad that you're there. It looks like Brendan is probably joining us right now.
Yes, he
hello.
Is.
Okay. Hello.
Hello
to both of you.
That's all right. A little technical difficulties, right? But we'll get past it.
Actually, trying to
yeah,
the,
it seems to be that's the case.
Yeah.
There we go.
Well, that's good. So let's get started because we're already 5 minutes into the show. Okay. Well, good appetite, as they say.
Is it really?
There's a lot to talk about.
10 o'clock. Okay, yes, there is. Is it after 10 o'clock, really? Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's like about 5.
My watch is
wrong. It's almost 4 after. It's not a problem.
Yeah, it is.
It's not a problem. I guess you guys heard the discourse yesterday between the Republican candidates.
We did. That's one of the things on our list of things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
got to get my disclaimer in first here, Hez. Okay,
well, that's a good point.
Okay. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm Jeffrey Swartz. I'm a professor of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus, together here with my compatriot, Brendan Berry, who just happens to be, at least on a day-to-day basis, a professor of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus. We're actually both day-to-day. Day laborers, they come and pick us up, you know, and take us to where we have to go.
I wish they'd pick us up.
Yeah, really, seriously. especially when we moved to our new quarters, which are going to be, mm-hmm. what, 10, 12 miles away from where we're usually at.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Okay, so with all that said, everything that Brendan and I say, okay, are our opinions and our opinions alone or actually together, but aren't necessarily the opinions of the administration of Cooley Law School or its faculty, either individually or at large. And since we got started kind of confused up as it goes along and I didn't get to hear Blog Talk Radio and say good morning to her, good morning to her, and saying good morning, you heard the voice of the guy who owns this time, Hezieris, who is our patron and all-around good guy. Good morning, Hezzy. How are you doing?
Good morning to both of you. It's a pleasure.
Yes, it is. For us. Okay? To be with you. Mm-hmm. This, we didn't do a show on Tuesday because Hezzy wasn't on the air on Tuesday. And thank goodness he's doing well. And so we're doing the show that we would have done on Tuesday. We're doing it on Thursday, but they both begin with a T, so that's okay. Okay. And one of the things that we are going to talk about is the debate last night, although I don't know what more can be said that, you know, they were up on the stage talking. I know they were. I recognize their voices, but nothing was really coming out of their mouths. Okay, that's the best way to say it. We have a number of things on our list, things that have happened over the last week or so. Some of them are ridiculous. Some of them are incredibly serious. Looking at the more ridiculous side, Lauren Boebert managed to make a fool of herself again last week. Just very quickly, she had a Social Security administrator in front of her and was complaining about the fact that his workers work from home 4 out of 5 days a week and saying they're sitting at home with their computers on, watching TV and doing all kinds of things, and they're not getting their work done. And he said, hey, excuse me, Congresswoman, but we know they're getting their work done because they're tied. They have to be onto our system. We see every keystroke. We know every single case they're working on. We know every piece of paper they look at, every piece of paper they create. They're working, and they're working very hard. And their productivity at home far exceeds what it was in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, she was like completely taken aback. So she says, well, if that's so, how did the backlog go from 10,000 cases to 107,000? He says, because we have more work to do. And we don't have enough people to do it, so why don't you give us more money in the budget? Mm-hmm. And all she could say is, well, we gave Biden the money he asked for. Well, we now need more money. I mean, she's trying so hard.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, her opponent raised over $3 million in the last quarter. That's 6 times the amount of money she's raised in the last year. Think she's in trouble? Yeah, I think they're fed up with her over in Gunnison and Monroe's and Telluride and all those places, you know, that she represents. So she made a jerk out of herself, as usual, and I thought that that was fun to talk about because I love talking about Boebert making a fool out of herself because, you know, she's so good at it. It is something she's really good at. Okay, and we have to give her credit for that. She's sort of like watching, I don't know, Groucho Marx in a movie. Okay?
Yeah,
always does
things
wrong, okay? Okay, that's kind of the way I see her. Okay, you know. Oh, by the way, we didn't talk about this before, but we have to say goodbye to George Santos.
Oh, yeah, what a shame.
Okay. Right. All you people in New York, say bye, George.
Okay. Uh huh.
And you know, don't sign a long term lease because you're going to be in government housing soon. Right. Okay. We'll kind of leave
it. Yeah.
Okay. So what else do we go? We want to talk about McCarthy.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yep.
Okay. Which leads us into what you want to talk about, right?
Yeah, Liz. Which, I mean, I've gotten like 17 things on my list, so I don't know which one.
Okay,
we talked about.
So, yeah, we're going to talk about McCarthy and his belief that he did the right thing.
Right.
Oh, I love it. I love this speech. Hold on, I got to get this. Okay,
yeah.
I got to get this because I got this here. He says, I never quit, but he just resigned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got to get this really. Okay.
Yeah.
He was recounting his record as a representative, including, quote, Republican women, veterans, and minorities elected to Congress at one time than ever before, leading Republicans to a House majority twice. Twice? Twice? Once. When was the first time that he led them to a House majority? I don't know. Third base. He then says that he thinks that Washington's in worse shape than it's ever been before. Look in the mirror, guy.
Yeah, no kidding. Right.
Okay. Okay. He says, I never could have imagined the journey when I first threw my hat in the ring. Too bad your head wasn't in the hat when you threw it in the ring. Okay. I go knowing I left on the field, as always, with a smile on my face. That's because you go to sleep at night with a coat hanger in your mouth. Okay? And looking back, I wouldn't have had it any other way. Really? There's nothing you would have done differently. Like, being a statesman and not going down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring after you said Donald Trump was responsible for January 6th and he's got to pay the price for it, but all of a sudden you realized you were out of money because you couldn't raise any money. Republicans were incapable of raising money in January of 21. So he went down and he kissed the ring to get money, and the price was he had to kill any attempt to try to impeach Donald Trump and lead Republicans down the path of insurrectionists. All that to get money. But it's not the last we've seen of McCarthy. He'll be on the Hill hawking somebody's wares in order to lobby. Not that any of the Republicans are going to listen to him. I don't know the value of him as a lobbyist, by the way. It's like zero. The stories about him that came out in Liz Cheney's book make your hair stand on end. And this is something that Brendan really wanted to talk about, so I'm going to let him talk about this, and then I'll chime in afterwards.
Apparently it's the kind of book that you actually learn stuff that you didn't already know. That's kind of refreshing because there's so much that comes out that we already knew because it happened right in plain sight. For example, this past couple of days, I've seen some media outlets making a real big deal out of the new pleading that Jack Smith filed about how they're going to show the Trump's intent to overturn the election. I'm seeing some commentators and reporters getting all excited about this, right? Here's the evidence that he's going to use, and it's all this is news. And I'm reading this stuff thinking none of this is news. My God, what's the evidence he's talking about is stuff that happened right in front of us on TV. I mean, Trump's behavior, has happened right in the open. But now back to Liz Cheney's book, there's stuff in there that we didn't know. And I haven't read it yet. I'm going to, But just the excerpts that have come out and been reported on, her book, I think, is where Jeff, it's certainly the first time I heard, you know, the real reason for McCarthy's visit to Mar-a-Lago. Apparently, after January 6th, there was a lot of Republican money that dried up. People who said, that's it, I've had enough of this, I'm not associating myself with this cult called the Republican Party, and I'm withdrawing my money. So the money dried up among Republicans who were not in the Trump cult. And that required McCarthy, if he wanted money, to go get the Trumpsters back, even though, yeah, he's on tape talking about how he's had enough of Donald Trump, and Donald Trump was the one who caused 9/11. I'm not so not on 9/11, the other disaster in our country, January 6th. So it was all about the money. That's why he went down there. We learned that from Liz Cheney. We also learned, Jeff and I talked earlier about her being in on a phone call, and it's interesting to hear her talk about it. When she said on one of the shows she was on, she said, you know, I got an email about this call that was going to happen, and they had just neglected to take me off the list, because by then
she was clearly not on board.
Yeah,
it was a leadership call, and she had been removed from the leadership at that point.
Yeah,
and they talked about the fake electors.
Right. And
she knew about that scheme before it took place.
Right. Yeah. As you said earlier, she could have been a witness.
Yeah, she could. She was a co-chair of that committee, but she could have been a witness.
Right.
And that's why. And I think that she knew a lot of what went on, which is what made her so effective when she spoke of it.
Right.
Because she it was the truth. She knew it was the truth because she had experienced it. She knew what was going on because she was being told by people who were involved in it. And I think that there was a belief at that point that she would go along with the program. And
right.
I think that they miscalculated. She is, I'm going to get the book. I'm probably going to get it in Audible because she reads it herself, and I'd rather hear it out of her mouth than just read the words. But she's, it's hard to imagine, as I said to you when we talked earlier, that this is the daughter of Darth Vader.
Right.
Okay, which is, you know, how Republicans referred to Dick Cheney when he was vice president. That he was Darth Vader, and, you know, incarnate. And so she's like Kylo Ren, for those of you who follow Star Wars. But and what she believes in as far as conservatism doesn't fit anything that you and I, Brendan, believe in.
Right.
By any stretch of the imagination. And on policy, you know, she's just all wrong. And she's out of touch with the American people in that context. But she is in touch with the Constitution. And she does believe in the Constitution, which good conservatives do. Their interpretation of it is different than ours.
Mm-hmm.
But they believe in the structure itself. And I, for one, obviously would never want her to be president of the United States. I don't want her to run for president. I want her out there pushing for anybody, and in this case Joe Biden, who can get rid us, or as we put it, who is going to rid us of this troublesome priest? Okay, Donald Trump. Who will rid us of this guy? It's going to take about 85 million of you. But you have to rid us of this guy. So that when Jack Smith convicts him, in my opinion, and I've said this before, there is literally no reason for his bond to be exonerated and for him to be remanded to the custody of the Marshals Service and the Bureau of Prisons. He is a flight risk. It isn't a question that he thinks he's going to sneak away. He isn't. When he leaves Washington, he's going to get on his plane, and it is not going to stop in Florida. And he will run for president by video from a foreign country, saying, "You have to let me return triumphantly." You've got to put him behind bars where he only gets a certain amount of time on a telephone, where he is restricted from passing political messages out through his lawyers who will be there every day so he doesn't sit in a cell. Those conversations will be monitored. Counsel will be admonished from passing messages to anybody. And if they do, they can join Donald in a jail cell. That way they can talk to him all day and we don't have to give him special privileges. He needs to be remanded. As I look at his guidelines, they're somewhere in the 12 to 14 year range. How do you not remand someone with that kind of punishment coming down the pike, especially when you can look down and say there's no way you're not going to jail? And by the way, I think Chunkin can make a finding based upon the evidence in front of her that as part of her remand order, I declare you to be ineligible to be president of the United States for violation of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. I'm sorry, this has to happen. And Liz Cheney knows it needs to happen, and so Liz Cheney has to go out there and do more than her book tour to sell books, although I don't think she needs the money. She has to be out there and live up to her word that she's going to do everything she possibly can to make sure that Donald Trump never becomes president of the United States again. Live up to what you say you're going to do. Even if you got to close your eyes and hold your nose and say you must elect Joe Biden. I'm going to get this book. I want to see just how bad it really is. I mean, bad for Trump.
Yeah.
And for other congressmen and senators. Because apparently she's got some stories about people in the Senate, too.
Right.
Should be interesting. You know, some of them are up for election, by the way, next year.
Right.
So it should be interesting. So, yeah, Liz Cheney's book. It's on my list. I haven't even read it, and I recommend it. Okay.
Right. Have you ordered the audio yet? Or still?
No, I haven't. Okay. I haven't. Because I haven't got time to listen to it now. But I should.
Right.
I should order it and just put it in my library to read.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip Comer for the moment.
Oh, what a shame.
Well, I'm going to go to something really important. Something that there is literally no humor in.
Uh-oh.
And we're going to talk about the presidents of Harvard.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and what was the other?
MIT.
And they're shameful. Shameful appearance before Congress. It was shameful.
Yeah.
Claudine Gay, and I'm going to say this flat out, if she's not anti-Semitic herself, she sure came across that way. And if she's not anti-Semitic and came across that way, she is pandering. She's the president of Harvard, everyone. She's pandering to the tens of millions of dollars that Harvard gets from interest in the Middle East. The people that come up with the money so they can give scholarships to Palestinians who can come over and study at Harvard, and while they're there, let's just surround all the Jews and abuse them. And she sits there, and she's asked by a Harvard graduate, Elise Stefanik, is it a violation of the code of conduct at Harvard to preach and support genocide against Jews? And her response was, it depends upon the context. Is there a context?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Is there a context where actually promoting and approving of genocide of any group of people, let alone Jews, on campus? And she sits there and says, it depends upon the context. It's context related. And Stefanik says, it's not. This is a simple answer. This is the easiest yes that anybody can actually give you in Congress. And you won't answer the question. So she moves on to Elizabeth McGill, who is the president of Penn. And she, seeing how everybody is cringing at the answer that Claudine Gay gave, and seeing the anger in Stefanik's face and on the faces of other members of the committee, isn't smart enough. This is the president of Penn, and she is not smart enough to read a room and say, I can't say what she said. I'm not going to say what she said. But you know what she does? She says what she said.
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be her in particular, but all of them. But she has the chance to answer the second time. The same question. She gets to go second. What do? You listen to number one. You see that that's obviously the wrong answer. That's like betting all your money on Final Jeopardy when no one can catch you and you get the wrong answer. Okay? Okay. I'm going to bet $40,000, although nobody has more than $2,000. And if I get it right, I get 80. But if I get it wrong, I lose everything. I think I'll bet it all. Okay? And it bang, wrong. Okay? Okay? I mean, seriously. Now, I'm going to let MIT off the hook because nobody talks about what the president of MIT said. Sally Kornbluth. Okay? She sort of went along with the program, but nobody's really paying attention to what she said, okay? And they're basically saying, well, it's a free speech matter. Really? Can you yell fire in a crowded theater?
Mm-hmm.
Can you stand on the Ellipse and promote violence against Congress? Can you do those things? No, you can't. There's laws over that. So save me your righteous First Amendment BS, because we know the First Amendment, and you are not promoting discourse. You are promoting and approving the promotion of violence against your own students who you are bound to protect. The easiest way to say that is you two are full of crap. You're protecting your funding. You are not protecting your students, especially at Harvard, where there is at least one incident where a large group of Muslim and Palestinian students surrounded a Jewish student and harassed and assaulted that person. What have you done about it, Ms. Gay? Not a frigging thing. If it takes action for it to be a violation, there it were. And you've done nothing. So when I say if you aren't anti-Semitic, you sure act like you are. And the calls for your resignation are more than well deserved. Take a hike. Don't walk away mad. Just walk away. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. This was shameful, utterly and completely shameful. And then yesterday, she doubled down in a different way. She starts out a post, you know, one of those twits, those X's. There are some who have confused a right to free expression with the idea that Harvard will condone calls for violence against Jewish students. Don't listen to what you heard. You're stupid. I'm smart. You don't understand what I said. I understood perfectly what you said. Everybody understood perfectly. Take your arrogance and go away. How arrogant to tell people, I'm smart. I can tell you, you didn't hear what you heard because I meant something else. I didn't say that. Thank you, Donald Trump Jr. McGill, on the other hand, at least admits I was unprepared for the question. And said that the calls for genocide against Jewish people are evil and threatening in and of themselves, and so therefore they are violations of our rules. And if our rules don't cover it, we're going to change it. We're going to reevaluate our code in light of how solidarity groups and campus members have been addressing the war. But in truth, too little, too late. You both need to go. The governor of Pennsylvania is a Jew, Ms. McGill. Did you know that? Josh Shapiro, can you sound more Jewish than that? He's a non-voting member of the Board of Trustees, but I can guarantee you her name is going to be part of the next meeting, and his push is to get rid of her. Harvard is a private university. On Wednesday, the Harvard University Palestine Solidarity Committee released a joint statement with Penn Students Against Occupation, which is another one of those Palestinian organizations, and then said, and several other Jewish groups. The response said that the hearing distracted from the genocide in Gaza. Real manifestations of anti-Jewish hatred that the groups vehemently oppose, while also justifying anti-Palestinian racism and saying that, and have said in the past, that in fact what happened on October 7th was justified. I'm sorry, we're going to talk later about raping women, abusing them, torturing them, and then putting them out of their misery is never justified. but we'll talk about that later. They basically condoned what the Palestinians did on October 7th. By the way, nobody talks about the parades of dead Jewish women going through the streets of Gaza City with Palestinians who lived there cheering what had been done. And I'm supposed to feel bad for them. I don't. I don't agree with genocide. We don't kill them all. But if you choose to stay there and you die because you think that Hamas is right, well, you want martyrdom, you got it. One of the groups wrote, "We condemn Congress's attempt to distract from the ongoing genocide in Gaza by dangerously equating anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism and targeting our students of color. We will not be silenced." Yes, you will be. By the way, my information comes from Al Jazeera. Don't go away mad. Just please go away. Don't bring your wanted genocide to our shores. You want to fight this battle? Go back to Gaza and fight. But you don't want to give up your free ride at Harvard, do you? That's how dedicated you are. American Jews went to Israel to fight for Israel. That's dedication. They're walking the walk. You're just talk. Harvard and Penn and MIT. Seriously. Take your arrogance and stick it where the sun doesn't shine. Got anything you want to add?
Oh, it's shocking. I can't imagine. I just can't imagine a more softball question. You know, it wasn't Congress that distracted anybody from anything. I mean, Stefanik threw up a softball for these people. I mean, there should have been no headlines come out of that answer.
No.
Because the answer was simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as though these are supposed to be the brightest people we can, right, that we can produce in this country. And apparently they don't know the dictionary definition of the word genocide. Right? I mean, because there's no way to get this answer wrong unless you don't know what genocide is. If somebody promotes genocide, as you said, not just of Jewish people, but of any people, is that a violation of a code that prevents threatening behavior? And the answer that they gave was it's all contextual. I have the same question you do, Jeff. What context are you talking about? Promoting genocide means, right, that you want mass slaughter, right, to rid the earth of a certain group of people, that you're promoting that. Okay, is that a danger or a threat to those people? Again, I don't know. I would think that I could, you know, I have nephews who are, 14 and 12, who could have answered that question correctly. But the presidents of Penn and Harvard couldn't pull it off. I'm with you. I don't know where these people, have come from. I don't know how they got where they are. I've been questioning for a while, what the hell is going on our most elite college campuses? most usually we're talking about students, like you said, the incident at Harvard. There's always Cornell is constantly in the news for all the wrong reasons, so I was thinking, well, we got a problem with the students who are populating these places, but now it turns out the administrators have joined them, right, in shocking behavior and
right.
Yeah. So no, I don't have much to add.
What they're really doing is that they are justifying for these people what they are doing by saying it's free speech.
Right.
That they have the right to free speech, and absolutely they do. Okay. Although private universities can violate your free speech rights, unless, of course, the government wants to claim because you get government money, you have to give free speech, but they can take away free speech rights if they want to. It's a private institution.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've said numerous times on this program, the Constitution defines what the government can do and what the government can't do. And they can't interfere with your rights to free speech under the First Amendment, but the truth of the matter is it says nothing about private individuals. I can shout you down all I want.
Mm-hmm.
You can come on this program and say things I don't like, and I just turn you off. And that's not a violation of the First Amendment. Facebook cannot violate your First Amendment rights. X, formerly known as Twitter, can't violate your First Amendment rights. They're not the government. And they don't operate on government money, so the government can't control them. But they sit there and they speak holier than thou to people about the First Amendment like they even understand what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Or what it is. Or understand a reasonableness standard. They take this absolutism.
Mm-hmm.
They can say whatever they want. They have a First Amendment right. That's right, but not necessarily on your campus. And not if they're, even if they're off campus, if they are in fact your students, you have a disciplinary code. Now the ABA is sticking their nose in. Almost justifying in a law school that anything that a student says is protected speech. No, it's not. The old expression, them's is fighting words. You don't promote violence against anyone. And you don't justify someone's violence against anyone for a political reason. There are people in this country who believe in political violence. One of them is running for president of the United States again.
Mm-hmm.
In perpetuity. But no, we don't. We're not supposed to countenance in any way, shape, or form political violence. And when you have a duty to protect all students, that includes the Jews or the blacks or to a certain degree or a full degree, the Palestinians. Jews don't have the right to pick on Palestinians on their campuses either. What you say in private, you can say in private. You can say anything you want, as long as you aren't promoting violence. I just think their thought process is just so warped. They're so worried about offending somebody. They're so worried about being declared to be anti-Muslim or anti-Jew that they let everybody say anything they want, and in the process, they're anti-everybody. Wow.
Yeah. These people want to talk about context.
Yeah. Yeah, give me a context, please.
Yeah, here's context. Whether speech is protected depends on the context. Okay, that's where the word context would fit in. Speech, not all speech is protected, even if you are the government. There are certain
right.
speech that you can target. Incitement is not protected speech. Fighting words is not protected speech. Obscenity is not protected speech. True threats is not protected speech. Conspiracy is not protected speech. Public danger is not protected speech. Right? How many times do courts have to say this?
Insurrection is not protected
yeah.
speech.
That's right. That's right. Right.
I just thought I'd throw that one in, okay?
Yeah, right. So, yeah, there's your context. You know, whether promoting genocide is dangerous does not depend on any context. Whether that speech is protected does. And the answer, of course, is no. It's not protected speech, especially on a college campus. As you say, at least MIT and Harvard are private. What's their excuse?
There is no excuse, except for they're afraid of losing funding.
Right.
If I side with the Jews, will I lose all my other funding? Can I afford to lose the Jewish money, which Harvard has lost tens of millions of dollars in contributions and money that they receive every year from certain foundations, Jewish foundations? They've lost it. It's been withheld, and it isn't coming back until Ms. Gay is gone. And the same thing goes for Ms. McGill. It's not coming back. Ms. McGill, did you forget that the governor of the state of Pennsylvania is a Jew? You must have forgotten that one. Uh-oh.
Yes, and I read his statement this morning. He's not very happy.
He's not happy.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't vote, but he is a member of the Board of Governors, or whatever they call them, regents, whatever they're called. She's going to get fired at their next meeting. Too little, too late, Ms. McGill. I'd pack my bags if I were you, okay? And if you haven't bought a house yet, don't buy one now. You're out. Dead woman walking. You've got to know that. Harvard's got a problem. Miss Gay is black. And their concern will be that they fired her because she's black. They use this as an excuse to get rid of their black president. That'll be the hue and cry. I still think they're going to fire her. And she deserves it. She's worse than McGill. She's just so arrogant that she thinks we're all stupid. Well, Ms. McGill, I'm smarter than you are, and you're the president of Harvard. Maybe I should take your job. Yeah, that'll happen. I had it, you know. Okay, we beat that dead horse. There is something else I want to talk about. As everybody is aware, a couple of things are happening in Congress that surround Joe Biden and his family. One of them is an investigation of what Republicans like to call what? The Biden crime family. Must be it's the Irish mafia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the head of it, of course, is Joe Biden and his consigliere and number one capo. I don't know how you say it in Irish Gaelic, so I'll just say it that way, is his son, Hunter. Now, let's make something clear. Hunter Biden has done a lot of bad things. Okay? Least of which is the gun charge he's facing right now. And like Billy Carter and the sons and relatives of other presidents, they traded on their family name. It's unseemly that they do it anyway. And so he traded on his family name to make a lot of money for doing almost nothing. Became hooked on cocaine and other drugs. And he was completely out of control. For a couple of years, he was just thoroughly and completely out of control. And he did some bad stuff. But the idea that Joe Biden was directing all of this or profited from any of this is absurd. It is, Republicans are so desperate to find a money connection between Joe Biden and his son that last week, James Comer, I think that's his first name, James, who is the head of the House Oversight Committee, announced in a ringing press conference, "We have the smoking gun."
Mm-hmm.
We can prove, okay, right, that Joe Biden was being funneled money, illegally obtained money, from his son. We have the check. Yes, they do have checks. They're about $1,000 each.
Right.
And after he said that, it took about 30 minutes for an answer to be put out. You're right. He is getting $1,000 a month from his son. Because his son, for all the money that he had none left and needed to buy a Ford Raptor, a truck. Is that a truck? I don't even know what a Ford mm-hmm. Raptor is. I think it's
that
a truck.
That is, yeah.
Okay. And he didn't have the money for it, and he couldn't get a loan. So his father lent him the money to buy the truck. And the checks were repayments from his son to him for the money that was lent by Joe Biden. I think he bought the car directly. I'm not sure whether he paid for it directly or he gave his son the money. But there are checks to show that it was direct, either a loan to his son or it was payment for the Ford Raptor, buying the Raptor. But it was a loan to his son no matter what, and his son was bound to repay him, and so he was paying him like $1,000 a month. The next UN crisis, it's money laundering. There never was a loan. This is right. Biden is going to take $1,000 a month. This is a huge crime family. He's getting $1,000 a month.
All right.
Okay? I mean, seriously, I want you to think about how absurd this is. Okay? We've got the receipts. Congratulations. They are receipts. Okay? I mean, really? Comer, you are... Every time you open your mouth and say something, there's always an answer to it that makes you look like the moron that you are. When are you going to give it up? Ken Buck, a man who I agree very little on, he's like the Liz Cheney of Colorado. This guy's been around in Colorado politics for God knows how long. At one point, he was my daughter's congressman. Ran for senator and Congress at the same time. He lost the Senate race, but he got reelected to his House seat, so he's still around. Colorado lets him do that. They have a Lyndon Johnson bill in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Says there is no proof of any wrongdoing that justifies an impeachment inquiry, which is why they didn't try to get a vote for an impeachment inquiry, because there's about 25 Congress people who will vote against, Republicans who will vote against it, because they're trying to get reelected in districts that Joe Biden won. And this would be like, oh, why don't you just shoot me now? If they voted for it. But he says, there's nothing here. There's no evidence. There are crimes that Hunter committed that he's being investigated for those by a special counsel. You wanted a special counsel, you got one. And when he didn't give you all the charges you wanted, he's a Democratic tool. He happens to be a Republican appointed by Trump. But he's a tool of the Democratic weaponization of the Justice Department, investigating the president's son. None of this makes sense, what they say, but it sounds good to their base. Yes, he will be prosecuted, and he may end up in jail. It's sad, where everything that Biden has gone through in his life involving his family, but if it happens, it happens. And Biden will not, under any circumstances, pardon his son. Because that would be his legacy. So he's not going to pardon his son. It isn't going to happen. If he was going to do it, he would have done it already. Or he'll do it right after the election, but he's not going to do it. He's not going to do it. He knows he can't. Seriously. We have the receipts. This is how they launder the money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did he buy a Raptor? Where did the money come from to buy the Raptor? Oh, yeah, that's right. He got it from his father. He paid for it directly. But he's laundering money.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break. You got anything you want to say about this?
Well, all Comer had to do to know that this was a non-story was look at the amount. You know, you're talking for a total of $4,000. If this is a crime, yes. If this is a crime family, and Biden is trying to profit off of the presidency, well, wow, $4,000 was a pretty good price. That's a pretty good price, you know. It's like he says that, you know, Comer says they've got the smoking gun, and then he produces a water pistol. Right, here it is. Here's the smoking gun. I mean, this stuff is
paint. It's a paint gun.
Okay.
Okay. It's a paint gun.
God.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he's using red paint and trying to get it all over anybody who's blue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nuts, man.
Okay. For a couple minutes, let's talk. The news has come out about this gunman at University of Nevada, Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
our latest shooting on campuses. Who apparently was a lifelong professional professor at different schools. Don't know what he taught.
Business.
He had applied for it. Yeah, business. Well, there you go. He gave everybody the business yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He applied to UNLV, and they rejected him. And I think it's very possible that this was what we refer to as suicide by cop. He wanted to die. He was depressed. He was 67. He couldn't find a job. Probably didn't have any money. I think we're going to find out that this was just, he did it at UNLV because they were the last straw. But he wanted to die. He didn't even go in there with an automatic weapon. He went in there with a pistol. So he really wanted to take somebody with him. So he took a bunch of students to the school that had rejected him. I think that's what we're going to find out. But the sad part is that it now brings to light how many guns are enough. 500 million guns. That's half a billion guns in this country. And we only have 350 million people. That's a third of a billion. Think about it. A half a billion guns. And those are the ones we know about. Half a billion guns. When do we have enough? Nobody asks that question. How many guns are enough? Are we going for a billion guns? If Donald Trump gets elected, the number is going to be zero. That's enough. Zero guns are enough. I don't know a dictator in this world who lets his people or her people own guns. They're a threat. Now in the United States, not so much, because our government has bazookas and tanks and Bradley fighting machines and all kinds of stuff, you know. But still, a billion guns? You think that's enough, Brendan?
Yeah, that should do. You know, I've been saying a long time. It's gotten it's gotten to the point of being, you know, a part of the American consciousness of where it's absolutely unacceptable. I mean, it's if you don't want to be shot in a mass shooting, your only option is not to leave your house. You know, even in your house, you can be shot, of course, but probably not as part of a mass shooting. You know, but you go to a grocery store, a movie theater. Like, think of the recent history here. Where can you go? Can you go to a house of worship? Nope, those get shot up. Can you go to a grocery store? Nope, those get shot up. Can you go to a mall? Oh no, big target.
You can find one that's open, by the way.
Yeah, right.
okay.
You know,
sorry.
Can you go to an elementary school? Is that safe? No, absolutely not. Can you go to a college campus? Nope, can't go there. I mean, you honestly, can you go to a concert? No, you can't go to a concert. Yeah,
can you walk down the street?
Right.
Okay.
That's where we're at. I mean, any rational person,
can you hide in your house?
Can you hide in your house? That's what you got to do.
No, you can't hide in your house.
Trying to do. Right,
okay.
Right.
People come into your house and shoot you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
The only place you can hide is on the International Space Station. I'm serious.
Canada. Go to Canada and hide, right?
Oh, you can hide. You can hide in England.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Those are countries. Those are democrat. Those are democratic countries. Small d. Mm-hmm. And they don't allow guns.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a hunting rifle in Canada because people hunt. But you don't hunt with an AR-15. I mean, inside the borders of the United States of America, there is no place to hide. Kaczynski had the right idea. He just couldn't stay away from post office. The Univano?
Mm-hmm.
Remember? Okay. He hid out in the mountains in the Rockies. Totally off the grid. He just couldn't stay away from post offices. He had to travel to go to a post office. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, but other than that, other than he liked to blow people up, a bad thing, but I mean, you know, other than he had the right idea. If you go far enough into the mountains and you build yourself a cabin, you're probably going to be okay. The odds are with you. Now, you got to watch out for a bear because, you know, bears, you know, a bear with a gun is really dangerous. So, you know, they do stand up and look at you. Okay? I mean, okay? So a bear with
good
a
thing
gun
they don't have opposable thumbs or we'd be in real trouble.
Yeah, but they got that claw that they can wrap around. Okay. But I, okay. Okay. You know? Bears, yes. Bears, no. But it just is one of those things where I just don't know. I just don't know where you hide. Really don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you should dig tunnels like Hamas did and you can hide underneath a city. Okay. I don't know. But then they've got guns. That doesn't save you either, does it?
Mm-mm.
It's just wrong.
No.
So we never got to our discussion, which we'll talk about on Tuesday for sure. It'll be top of the list about the report that came out regarding the use of rape as a weapon by Hamas. And the charges at the world court that should come eventually once they identify some of these people that are in some of the videos. What kind of moron videos what you're doing to people and don't think you're going to pay the price for it. We didn't talk about the gag orders, although we're still waiting for the D.C. court to come back. I think that that's really a subject matter for when the D.C. court comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republican debate was not a debate. And I don't think there was anything new there. But we can talk about that next week, too.
Yeah.
And Mike Johnson, our Christian insurrectionist.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing we'll mention is Tommy Tuberville folded like a cheap suit.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I heard was that we're down to 10 people who will get individual hearings and be confirmed before the end of the year.
Yeah.
So that's over and done with. Because they found a way around him and he knew he was going to lose. He didn't want to lose. He wanted to make a deal. So they let him off the hook. Republicans let him off the hook. So that's the way that ended. We'll talk about that too.
Okay. Yeah.
Christian conservatism. Okay. I think we're done for the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Hezzy.
Thank you, Hezzy, for giving us part of your Thursday.
Yep.
And
absolute for you any day.
Okay, you haven't got anything going next Tuesday, do you?
No, except for you.
Okay, because both of us are available because our teaching is over for the term.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we're going into break. We're going into break, so we'll be available for you. Okay?
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay,
great. So we'll speak to you next time on Tuesday.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody.
Happy Hanukkah. Yeah, and to you, too.
Okay, l'chaim.
And Merry Christmas as well.
Have a great weekend. We'll see you Tuesday.
Okay,
excellent.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
What a pleasure. Goodbye. Well, it doesn't get better than Jeffrey Swartz, Brendan Beery, Jeffrey Swartz, both from WMU. Cooley Law School in Tampa Bay, Florida. Oh, always a delight. That's the bottom line. Well, we're going to move on. Bear with me a moment, and we're going to cover some other issues. And so bear with me a moment here as we move on to the second hour. Of the day. Bear with me a moment here. Let me just quickly see if I've gotten all this correct. Okay, I think I made one error here. So bear with me a moment. All right, bear with me a second here as I try to put this all in place. Okay, I think we've almost got this figured out. Bear with me a moment. All right, I think that I've got it right at the moment. Okay. All right, one more second. I should be okay in a moment. All right. It looks like everything's in place now. I've got the split screen on as well. And all right. Okay, let's cover some of the latest news. Bear with me a moment. All right. Well, evidently the Israel-Hamas war continues. Israel strikes Gaza cities at the two-month mark. And Israeli troops continued their ground offensive in Gaza's northern and southern cities, while Israelis at home remembered Hamas's deadly attacks at their two-month mark. And so that's the story. Bear with me a moment here. Well, what we need to know, it seems that the head of the United Nations has used a rarely exercised power to warn the Security Council of an impending humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. Israel's foreign minister has strongly criticized Guterres's leadership of the United Nations as a, quote, danger or to world peace. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office says that Israel has approved a, quote, minimal, end quote, increase in fuel supplies to prevent a humanitarian collapse in Gaza. Israeli troops, tanks, personnel carriers, and bulldozers have rolled into Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city. So, 5 minutes ago, Hezbollah's actions could turn Beirut into Gaza, Netanyahu says. It seems that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that Beirut would be turned into Gaza and Khan Yunis if Hezbollah started a war with Israel. If Hezbollah chooses to start an all-out war, then it will, by its own hand, turn Beirut and southern Lebanon, not far from here, into Gaza and Khan Yunis, Netanyahu said to Israeli troops deployed along the Israeli-Lebanon border. Hezbollah militants and the IDF have been exchanging fire since the Israel-Hamas war began. Also today, a missile fired from Lebanese territory killed a civilian in northern Israel, according to the Israeli military. Additional launches from Lebanon toward Israel were also identified, the military said, adding its, quote, helicopters, tanks, and artillery are striking the sources. Hezbollah is an Iran-backed Shiite political party and a military group in Lebanon. Hezbollah is considered a terrorist organization by the United States, Germany, and several Sunni Arab countries, while the European Union lists its armed wing as a terrorist group. Well, it seems destroying Hamas is a very long-term endeavor, counter-extremism expert says. Israel stated mission to destroy the Palestinian militant Islamist group Hamas is a very long-term endeavor. Hans Jakob Schindler, the senior director at the Counter-Extremism Project, told Deutsche Welle. Well, Schindler said such an endeavor, quote, will require more than just military operations and international cooperation, but also social, economic development in the Palestinian territories, end quote. Well, speaking about the time frame of destroying Hamas, which is designated as a terrorist group in several countries, Schindler expected Israel's ongoing military operation in the Gaza Strip to last for another month or two. The scale we're seeing right now, end quote, before mounting international pressure leads Israel to scale back its operations. Afterward, he said, quote, really long-term work on eradicating Hamas ideology should begin. He added that this cannot be done by Israel alone and would require international cooperation. Schindler spoke about the Israeli military targeting Hamas's leader, Yahya Sinwar, who is believed to be based in the southern Khan Yunis city. Schindler described Sinwar as a, quote, hardliner, end quote, within Hamas and a key leader. He said that Sinwar was responsible for setting up Hamas's, quote, terrorist infrastructure, end quote, and advocating taking hostages to exchange for Palestinian prisoners held in Israel. He is the one who really strongly argued for Hamas' ability not to only conduct smaller scale terror attacks in Israel, but what we have seen on October 7th, Schindler said. So he really is the brains behind all of this. Well, the Gaza death toll rises to 17,177, the health ministry says. Number of people killed in Gaza since Israel began attacking the Strip in response to the deadly Hamas October 7 attacks has risen to 17,177, the Hamas-run health ministry said today. The ongoing Israeli military bombardment and ground offensive have injured 46,000, the ministry said, adding that 350 people were killed and 1,900 injured in the past 24 hours. Well, intense fighting was particularly reported in the southern Khan Yunis city, Gaza's second largest city, on Wednesday. The Israeli army said it was completely encircling the city and was targeting Hamas fighters. Hamas is designated a terrorist organization by Israel, Germany, the United States, and other countries. Well, about 4 hours ago, we hear that Jordan airdrops emergency aid into southern Gaza. Jordanian Air Force has airdropped urgent aid into the Gaza Strip, the armed forces announced in a statement. The emergency delivery included medical supplies to help sustain a makeshift Jordanian hospital in Khan Yunis. The city, the largest in southern Gaza, has been the epicenter of Israeli troops operations in the Palestinian territory this week. The Jordanian military stressed it would continue to provide Gaza residents with, quote, all types of aid and support, end quote. It said this was the fourth time it had airdropped medical and relief supplies to the enclave. The previous three deliveries went to a field hospital in northern Gaza. The airdrop came as United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned of an impending, quote, humanitarian catastrophe, end quote. And since the war began 2 months ago, deliveries of food, water, and other vital aid to Gaza have been heavily restricted. Well, 5 hours ago, we heard that Israelis remember the October 7th terror attack victims. 2 months on from the Hamas terror attacks, Israelis are remembering the 1,200 people who were killed in the carnage. Thursday also marked the start of Hanukkah, the first Jewish festival since the October 7 attack, in which the militant group stormed Israeli communities at a music festival. Hamas, which is designated as a terrorist organization by several countries, also took more than 220 hostages that day back into the Gaza Strip. Organizers of the music festival in southern Israel, where at least 364 people died, have recreated the scene of the massacre as an exhibition in Tel Aviv for the world to see. Well, Israel has been heavily bombarding Gaza since the attack, and in late October, it expanded its operation to a ground offensive. More than 16,000 Palestinians have thus far been killed in the territory, according to the Hamas-run health authorities there. A week-long truce in late November saw the release of dozens of hostages, with Israelis saying it believes 138 remained in Gaza. Well, Israel has resumed its military operations since the expiry of the truce on Friday, shifting the focus of its ground offensive to southern Gaza. It says it is seeking to destroy Hamas, which Israel accuses of breaking the truce. Well, Reuters and an Air France press probes conclude that Israeli fire killed a journalist in Lebanon. The Reuters and Agence France press news agencies have concluded a separate investigation that an attack on a group of journalists in southern Lebanon on October 13 was conducted by Israeli forces. Rights organizations have said the strikes should be investigated as a war crime. The attack killed Reuters video journalist Issam Abdallah and injured 6 others, including 2 from the French Agence France press news agency, one of whom later had a leg amputated. Journalists from the Qatari-owned Al Jazeera broadcaster were also among the group. They were hit by 2 strikes in quick succession while filming cross-border shelling. Both Reuters and Agence France-Presse reported in their investigations that the attack was conducted by a tank shell, which they concluded belonged to the Israeli army. Agence France-Presse said the tank shell is only used by the Israeli military in this border region. Reuters said it presented the Israeli Defense Forces with its findings suggesting that the attack rounds were fired from within Israel, asking whether Israeli troops were aware they were firing at journalists. Quote, we don't target journalists, end quote. Reuters quoted IDF International spokesperson Richard Hecht as saying he did not provide further comment. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch said a separate statement or statements from the 2 strikes appeared to be a, quote, deliberate attack on civilians, end quote, and should be probed as a war crime. Well, the United Arab Emirates submits a United Nations Council resolution calling for a ceasefire. United Arab Emirates says it has submitted a draft resolution to the United Nations Security Council calling for a humanitarian ceasefire in the Gaza Strip to be, quote, adopted urgently, end quote. Continuing, the situation in the Gaza Strip is catastrophic and close to irreversible, and quote the United Arab Emirates mission to the United Nations, said in a statement, quote, "We cannot wait. The Council needs to act decisively to demand a humanitarian ceasefire." Well, the United Arab Emirates mission to the United Nations called for a humanitarian ceasefire resolution to be adopted urgently and has just submitted a draft to the United Nations Security Council. "The situation in the Gaza Strip is catastrophic and close to irreversible. We cannot wait. The Council needs to act decisively to demand a humanitarian..." "A humanitarian ceasefire. In a rare invocation of the Secretary General's authority under Article 99 of the United Nations Charter to bring matters that may threaten international peace and security to the attention of the Security Council this morning, the Security Council sent a letter. The Secretary General sent a letter urging the Council to act to avert a humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza with wider implications for the OPT and general peace and security. The United Arab Emirates draft resolution has the support of the Arab and OIC group, and this is a moral and humanitarian imperative, and we urge all countries to support the call of the Secretary General. So Antonio Guterres, about 22 hours ago, invoked Article 99 of the United Nations Charter for the first time in his tenure as Secretary General. So he says, "Facing a severe risk of collapse of the humanitarian system in Gaza, I urge the Council to help avert a humanitarian catastrophe and appeal for humanitarian ceasefire to be declared." So we'll just have to see where all this goes. Okay, bear with me a moment here. All right. Let's just see. Bear with me a moment here as I move on to see if there are any other issues that have been brought up. Okay. All right, bear with me a moment. I think that that's it. That's what we can cover at the moment with regard to what's happening in the Middle East. So we'll just have to see where else things go. This is really very disturbing. An anti-Semitic mob has descended on Michael Solomonov's falafel restaurant in Philadelphia. They demanded a boycott of Jewish goods, and Michael Solomonov is a James Beard award-winning chef. He makes some of the best hummus outside of Israel, as well as outstanding lamb and other dishes. It all ships via Gold Belly. If you want to send a message of your own to the boycotters, you can do so. So you could always look that up. Goldbelly.com is the name of the restaurant. Let me just quickly see if we have anything else here. All right. I think that we've covered our place. And let me just quickly see if there's anything else I need to cover with you today. Okay. Let me move on to the other issues as well. Seems there's a growing call to reform the United Nations peacekeeping missions. Africa has been a focal point for the United Nations peacekeeping missions for decades. For the first time, the continent has hosted a global ministerial meeting and urged the United Nations to reform its peacekeeping operations. So United Nations peacekeeping missions have received a significant boost from the United Nations member states, who pledged their support and resources this week at the 2023 ministerial meeting in Ghana's capital of Accra. Nearly 75 years after the first United Nations peacekeeping mission was established, more than 2 million peacekeepers from 158 countries have served in 71 operations. But in the past decade, United Nations peacekeeping missions have faced many challenges, including reputational damage and mistrust, particularly in Africa. In Mali and the Democratic Republic of Congo, for example, United Nations peacekeeping missions haven't achieved their goals and have often been accused of escalating tensions. Both countries have called for an end to the peacekeeping missions in their respective nations, and the Blue Helmets are already withdrawing from Mali following a request by the ruling junta. Such reactions have cast doubt on the continuous relevance of peacekeeping missions worldwide. The delegates attending the fifth United Nations peacekeeping ministerial gathering in Accra have re-echoed their support. So, UN peacekeeping missions are ongoing in the Democratic Republic of Congo, South Sudan, Western Sahara, and the Central African Republic. Well, the United Nations Under Secretary General for Peace Operations, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, advised Deutsche Welle that the commitment of all nations was essential amid the many doubts. Quote, we have a more divided world. We have conflicts that are multiplying. We have more threats and deteriorating security environment in most of our peacekeeping operations, Lacroix had said. The United Nations top official said that the Accra meeting gives hope of securing the support of political leaders towards peacekeeping operations. Quote, peacekeepers have helped many countries successfully navigate the difficult path from war to peace, from Liberia and Namibia to Cambodia, Sierra Leone, Timor, Leste, and many more countries, Lacroix noted, stressing that United Nations operations have an exceptionally strong record of preventing and reducing violence, as well as preventing wars from recurring. And this is the fifth United Nations peacekeeping ministerial meeting and the first in Africa. So reforms needed in peacekeeping, ministers and delegates from over 85 countries attended the meeting, focused in deliberation on how best to reform peacekeeping operations and adapt to prevailing challenges. A peacekeeping mission that prioritizes the protection of troops and civilians and making operational environments safer and secure while rolling out effective and efficient technological tools was key on the agenda of the meeting. Ghana's Vice President Mahamadou Bawumia told the meeting that reforms are inevitable if United Nations peacekeeping missions are to succeed. Quote, our collective mission is to explore and navigate the gap in peacekeeping missions, evaluate options, and work towards concrete outcomes that would enhance the effectiveness of peacekeeping operations, Bawumia had said. Quote, in line with ongoing reform efforts, particularly action for peacekeeping and the digital transformation strategy, our mission and objective is clear to generate high-performing and specialized capabilities, fostering partnerships and charting a path towards a more robust and more responsive peacekeeping apparatus, end quote. Gaza's Foreign Affairs Minister Shirley Ayoko Botchwe also emphasized the need for adaptability and new approaches. The wealth of knowledge to be shared by participating nations would not only deepen our collective understanding, but also provide a solid foundation for developing comprehensive strategies to address contemporary peacekeeping and security challenges. Botchwe said the challenges we face demand sustained commitment and collaboration. Security expert Adib Sa'ani told Deutsche Welle that despite the challenges of peacekeeping missions, especially in Africa, their work is still relevant. Quote, I can't deny that Africa cannot do it alone. We are not self-reliant. However, what I think should happen is for the United Nations to restructure, Sa'ani had said. It called on local actors to get more involved in the missions operations so they would be more trusted and successful. So, bear with me a moment as we move on to some other issues as well. And this is really important as well. This is with respect to Macron, the French president, who's hosting Hungary's Orbán in a bid to unlock the European Union's support for Ukraine. Well, French President Emmanuel Macron met Prime Minister Viktor Orbán on Thursday today in a bid to break the deadlock ahead of a European Union summit after the Hungarian leader threatened to block further backing for Ukraine. Macron will host Orbán at the Élysée Palace for a working dinner from about 19:30 Greenwich Mean Time to discuss several subjects on the agenda for the European Union summit next week, including various aspects of European support for Ukraine, end quote. That includes new financial aid and starting European Union membership talks with Kyiv. The dinner will mark a rare welcome by a major Western European leader for the Hungarian strongman, who has retained closer ties with Russian President Vladimir Putin than any other European Union leader, even after Moscow's February 2022 invasion of Ukraine. But it comes as concern grows that Orbán could torpedo the chance to take key decisions concerning Ukraine at the European Union summit on December 14 through 15. In a letter sent to European Union Chief Charles Michel on Monday, Orbán demanded the postponement of key decisions on Ukraine, including additional financial aid and the possibility of beginning European Union membership negotiations. The European Commission last month recommended that membership talks begin with Ukraine and Moldova. It is also proposing a 50 billion euro, that's a $54 billion financial lifeline for Kyiv as part of a revision of the bloc's long-term budget. But Orbán suggested dropping these matters from the agenda of the Brussels summit, quote, as the obvious lack of consensus would inevitably lead to failure, end quote, referring to his previous letter urging a strategic discussion, quote unquote, on the European Union's approach to Ukraine. Orbán warned European Union leaders would not be, quote, in a position to take key decisions unless a consensus on our future strategy towards Ukraine is found, end quote. Quote, further, for the sake of unity, he said, the European Union should drop Ukraine from the summit agenda. As most European Union decisions require unanimity, Hungary can potentially veto both proposals. Angering fellow European Union leaders, Orbán met for bilateral face-to-face talks with Putin in China in October. Critics accused Orbán of trying to blackmail Brussels to gain access to billions of euros in European Union funding. Hungarian Commission, the European Commission rather, is withholding nearly 22 billion euros from Hungary over concerns about corruption and perceived backsliding of democratic norms. In November, Brussels said it may release up to 10 billion euros of those funds, saying that Hungary has improved judicial independence. Orban has only reluctantly gone along with previous European Union decisions to support Ukraine as it defends itself from Russia's full-scale invasion and sought to water down sanctions on Moscow. Now, 1 second here. Now, let's see what's happening here. Evidently, Ukrainian truckers are stranded in the Poland battle in Poland. So in a Polish car park near the Ukrainian border, truck drivers stranded by a month-long blockade that has caused disruption and a row with Ukraine shoveled snow off their vehicles. Around 100 truckers have been stuck in Kolzawa, one of the crossings blocked by protesting Polish haulers who complain about what they say is unfair competition from Ukrainian companies. This is our life now, Yuri, a 56-year-old Ukrainian trucker, advised. Yuri, who declined to give his surname, is carrying a cargo headed for Kyiv and has been camped out at the parking lot for 7 days. I didn't expect to be stuck here this long. All our supplies are running out. Thank God there's still water. But if it gets even more frosty, there will be no water at all, Yuri had said. Polish transport business owners launched blockades at the Ukrainian border in early November, demanding the reinstatement of the system of entry permits to the European Union for Ukrainian trucks. While the permits were waived after Russia's full-scale 2022 invasion of Ukraine to ease the cargo traffic and in and out of the war-torn country. Negotiations between Poland, Ukraine, and the European Union so far have failed to resolve the dispute, and the stalemate continues with hundreds of truckers waiting at the checkpoints. Well, around here, every driver would tell you more or less the same, that the politicians can't find a solution, and we are merely instruments in their hands, a Roman, a truck driver, said as he awaited in Kozalva. The 48-year-old Ukrainian is in charge of managing the makeshift queuing systems that the Ukrainian truckers created to improve traffic flow. The Polish truckers who block the Kozalva checkpoint are now letting 7 trucks per hour cross into Ukraine, and the Ukrainians started to distribute paper-made queuing numbers among themselves to know when their turn to cross comes. Roman, who only provided his first name, said he was ready, already the fifth person responsible for managing the queuing system, which included a notepad with records of vehicle numbers and a group chat on a messaging app. Those who waited the longest for 13 to 14 days have already left, Roman advised Agence France-Presse. It's going much faster now, around 50 to 60 trucks pass per day. But if nothing breaks the impasse, that will mean around a week and a half of waiting ahead for truckers now reaching Kozova. Igor, a 68-year-old trucker from Lviv, was driving frozen fish from Lithuania to Kyiv when the protest at the border forced him to stop in Kozova, where he has been stuck for 6 days. Boiling a pot of water on a camp stove inside his cockpit, Igor said he expected to spend at least 3 more days at the border. Quote, I use food and water supplies sparingly because we don't know for sure how much waiting there is, Igor had said. A dozen truckers gathered around a brazier at the entry of the Kozova parking lot, where a small van with Polish volunteers handing out free warm meals bread and bottled water showed up. The truckers grabbed bowls with sour rye soup, around 5,000 of which are distributed daily by World Central Kitchen at the block's checkpoints in Poland. Helping out in Kosovo was 39-year-old Sahil Lanat, who had driven to the border from Wrocław, about 310 miles west, to help out the Ukrainian truckers. It's helping in getting out with the police to call the local authorities to bring wood for heating or water, but not advised Agence France-Presse. We're getting by somehow. There's just no proper toilet, no place to take care of hygiene, he said. To Yuri, the lack of sanitary facilities is most acute, but he also worries about colder temperatures and running out of money. Asked about the protests, he said it was detrimental to Ukraine's efforts to defend itself. Quote, Poles always really helped Ukraine in the first days of the war, Igor said, but here we think it is just some kind of Russian propaganda. Oh, goodness. So it goes. Bear with me a moment here. All right, let me just quickly see if we can get some other information for you now. Bear with me a moment. And this is really quite interesting. Germany has a new scheme to fill the skilled labor gap. Germany is struggling to find trade workers as high school graduates pursue less physically demanding careers. Now a program in a flood-hit region is convincing job seekers about the advantages of learning a trade. So you finish school, now what? In Germany, many young people go to college. Others sign up for a year of voluntary social work. The one thing many young people don't do is learn a trade, and the numbers show it. Last year, every second trade business couldn't find enough suitable applicants for all their apprenticeship training positions. Quote, the trades really have problems getting enough young talent, said Killian Buzer, a professor of economic policy at the University of Göttingen. This is particularly true for trades working with climate change technologies, are in high demand for everything from installing solar systems or heat pumps to renovating house facades or connecting charging stations for electric cars. Apprenticeships are also important to alleviate the shortage of skilled workers that already exist in the trades. But how do you attract young people to careers that usually require a lot of physical activity? Well, a special project in the RAHR Valley. Well, one idea that has come out of the R Valley, a region in western Germany in the state of Rhineland-Palatinate. Tradespeople are particularly sought after because the area was hit by a severe flood in 2021. Many buildings, roads, and other infrastructure were damaged or completely destroyed. Volunteers poured in to help. A lot needed to be done. But like the rest of Germany, businesses here lacked young talent. So why not bring both things together, volunteering and trade jobs? This is the idea behind a project initiated in March of 2022 by the state's labor ministry and the Koblenz Chamber of Crafts. The project lets young people try out various trades for 6 to 8 months and at the same time help rebuild the R Valley. So more than 50 companies are opening their doors to prospective carpenters, bricklayers, tilers, painters, metal workers, and automotive mechanics. The Koblenz Chamber of Crafts has also opened its training workshops for participants, plus everyone receives accommodation and $508 per month. Well, personal experience and a new line of work. Alexander Lenhoff and Konstantin Speer are two people the program brought together. Benhoff has been running his own carpentry business for 3 years with around 10 employees. compared to some. He's been lucky. His business was spared on the night of the flood. Spare's family's home wasn't so fortunate. After the 22-year-old finished high school, he helped out at home and volunteered in his community. Then he started studying to become a teacher, but Spare was unhappy studying. When he found out about the project from a painter who helped renovate his family's house, I already had the idea of running a trade, said Spare. But especially with the flood, when I worked at home like a full-time tradesman for 8 months, I felt like doing something in the trade sector. And so it goes. These are the sort of issues that take place around the world. So that's about it. Well, that's about close to the end of our second hour. So I'm going to wish you all a good day. And I've got an appointment, so I have to leave a little bit earlier than expected. But all the best, and thank you all for joining us today. Goodbye.